As dads, some days we feel like we have all the answers, and some days we feel like we don't have a clue. If that describes you, you're at the right place. This is the All Pro Dad Podcast. And speaking of the All Pro Dad Podcast, we have the founder of All Pro Dad, Mark Merrill. Mark, thanks for joining us.
Ted, great to hang out with the boys today. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Just one of the guys.
Each episode, we ask just one question for us to dive into, because we feel like as dads, that's enough for us to deal with. And then we leave people with a pro move, which is not always easy in the middle of life, but we're going to make it so and make it also powerful. Today's question is what, Buck?
How can I help my anxious kid?
All right.
But before we do that, I want to know what makes us tick. And what makes you guys anxious?
First of all, I think finance more than anything makes me anxious.
Yeah.
I'll be the first to admit it's even hard for me to check my bank account. Like that's I have to bow up for that. Like, what is this going to look like when I finally see it? And so that gets me. With anxiety, when it comes on me, it depends. I have two different things. I can get paralyzed very easily where I just feel like I can't move. I just want to kind of get into the fetal position and that's it. In fact, one time I found out that my paycheck was super low. I was on a commission job and it was super low and I hadn't made any sales. And I don't think there's any way out of this. And my wife came home and I was on the bed in the fetal position, crying. Like this is shortly after we were married. She's like, who did I marry? And then there's I go into hyper mode where I just go hardcore, you know, do, you know.
Right. Is that to like down. Try and fix?
Yeah, I got to fix
issue?
This. Yeah. I got to fix this right now. I got to do it. It's got to be, I got to get out of this. I got to get out of this tension. I got to get out of this.
And it's almost like that's the kind of same thing that I experience in the sense that it's a control issue for me. Mm-hmm. And I think that's maybe one of the roots of the anxiety thing is like, I'm not in control. Either I've lost control or I'm not going to be able to control this. And so I don't know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And so I'm feeling it. I'm feeling really anxious because I'm not in control. And I know I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but I know we're going to talk about what is the solution to that. And part of that solution is trust.
I have a long history with anxiety, I think. Being diagnosed with adult onset ADHD and just a whole slew of things. So mine, some of it's, you know, like it's truly believable. It's based on something that's, you know, tangible and something that should be anxious. And a lot of it's not. A lot of it is just self-doubt and self, like putting myself down or not believing in myself kind of stuff. And so, yeah.
So what does that look like when you're anxious?
I want to combat what's making me anxious by fixing it, and that's not always good. I mean, actually, it rarely is good because a lot of times I don't get the result that I'm wanting to, and I've kind of pushed everyone out of the way in the process, you know, and I've hurt feelings or whatever, or I've blown up in myself and. And it's just, that's not positive for me. It's not edifying to my children or myself or even, you know, my faith walk with God, you know? And so it's tough sometimes, but and anxiety, when it first like started happening, you know, gosh, 5-6 years ago now, it was a lot of like, just this crushing weight. I really was on the floor, just having a panic attack. And I felt like I couldn't get up, like physically I couldn't get up. So, and borderline hyperventilated. My wife was like, what snapped me out of it was my wife was like, I can't pick you up. So, so she's like, so slow down, breathe. And she just helped me. And then we went on from there to get some professional help. But yeah.
So what about you, Mark? What does anxiety look like when you start to feel anxious?
And hearing BJ and Buck, yeah, it's that time, as I was sharing, when I just don't feel like either I've lost control or don't feel like I can control something, because that's a big thing that I've struggled with all my life, that control thing as as a husband, as a father here at Family First. And so that's definitely been a challenge. And so what I then do is I actually move more into control mode, move more into the fix it, Mr. Fix It mode in marriage as parent here at Family First. And that's not a good thing, because then you're just saying, I'm trying to control it even more, and I'm trying to even so that I'm not anxious, and it's just this vicious cycle that I get into.
Which is a natural reaction, I think, especially for guys. I'm the same way, and I've talked about a little bit on the podcast about struggling with anxiety, and I'm the same way. I want to control it. I'm going to fix it. I'm going to go faster, which messes things up. You know, I'm already an electric chihuahua. All right. And so just being on a good day. But I feel like I go faster and ultimately make more mistakes. I'm less available to my kids because they don't understand I've got stuff to do. I got to fix this. I got to fix myself. I'll either do that or totally withdraw. So it's like one thing. I'm just going to escape. I'm just going to go over and just withdraw and be by myself.
I'm hearing a common theme here, that fix it thing. We all kind of seem to be going into that mode.
Yeah. That's a great bridge into it too, because the question today is, you know, how can I help my anxious kid? So that's what it looks like on us. So when our kids are anxious, because I read one study that says that teenagers on average have more anxiety than psychiatric patients did in the 50s. Mm. And I thought, wow, how'd they get that stat? Which may or may not even be true, but the interweb said it was. But I think we can all agree that we've watched our kids become more anxious. There's more reasons for the anxiety. We had kids in high school starting in 2020. My son graduated in 2020. I watched my daughter, you know, in her freshman year, has gone through that piece of it. So how do we help our kids? How do we help our kids when they're anxious? And I think we can start with, when your kids are anxious, what is your knee-jerk reaction? When you see them upset about something, they're frustrated about something, they're anxious about, what's your knee-jerk reaction?
My knee-jerk reaction is to try to calm them down, and not necessarily in a positive way. You know, it's like when my son is, you know, freaking out because he's anxious about something, or he's failing at something and he's not, but that anxiety is rising up. I'm like, hey, calm down, you know? Mm. And it's not, there's sometimes it can lack empathy, I guess. And so, and I think a lot of times they need to feel their feelings. Mm. And sometimes I think I try to squash that.
Trying to fix it.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you? It makes me anxious. So I'm like,
fix it.
Relax.
Yelling, relax.
Relax.
We're laughing because it's true that we do that, right?
Well, it's like we were at dinner last night and Mark was sharing with us this Bob Newhart, you know, where he, you know, is doing he's like a psychiatrist counseling, and it's counseling for 5 minutes, and he hears the story for 5 minutes, and he's like, okay, my answer, stop it. You know, stop, just and that's the way I react. I'm like, and that just makes everything worse. Like, and that's where it's just kind of, I haven't dealt with my own anxiety, and then they get anxious, and then it's like if they're like a spinning top, my anxiety just spins it even faster.
Right.
Because of my reaction, it just makes it even worse, and then even affects it in the future.
Mark, what about you? What's your knee-jerk reaction to someone else's anxiety?
I think there's two options here for me, and it depends on what they're saying, what they're anxious about, what they're struggling with. And one is the immediate, what we're talking about before, the immediate, I'm going to control this, I can fix this, and I go into that mode. Or it could be a little bit of what BJ said, that I start getting not just anxious, but fearful and worried, especially if it's my kids, like, this is not good. And I start getting like, what's going to happen? Is this, how serious is this? Where is this going to go over the next few minutes, over the next hour? What about tomorrow, the next day? Yeah. Is this something that's going to be an ongoing issue? So that whole worry, fear, anxiety, which are all, I guess, are they all cousins? Kind of all related?
It certainly feels like it.
Yeah.
So what response are they getting for you? What are they seeing dad coming back with when they present you or around you with anxiety?
Well, if I'm in that fix it mode, that is definitely not helpful. Mm. And so, but if I'm in that mode of being fearful myself or worried, that's really not helpful. But if I enter their world, that's helpful.
Right.
And I know we want to talk about some of those solutions, and I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but yeah, that is helpful. It's the whole identification thing. That's the word that I would use here, is identifying with them, feeling what they feel so that they'll listen and so that I can relate to them.
Like, you get this. And my daughter gave me permission to share this. A few years ago, she started having panic attacks, and she's always been an anxious kid. And she would tell you that. And I said, can I share this? Because I think it could be helpful for people. She goes, absolutely. If you can make one kid not have to go through this or help a dad, she goes, absolutely. So I appreciate that. But she had her first panic attack. And I remember, if I'm just going to keep it really real, I'm thinking, it can't be worth all this, because she's already a demonstrative kid. Like, she gets excited, big excited. And so her panic attack was off the charts demonstrative to me. And I remember thinking, what is happening right now? And I would just be, hey, baby, you're going to have to calm down, or you're going to hurt yourself. Like, you just got to calm down. And then I would get into the mode of, this was always super helpful. You need to exercise more. Like, part of this is you need to exercise, because that's how I get rid of mine. I'll just go run. People are like, okay, I'm out on this podcast if he said that to his daughter. So no. But it was, I started watching. And so I had a friend who was writing a book called Scene, and it was talking about helping your kid with anxiety. He wrote it with a counselor, and I was telling him about it. And I said, what do I do? And he goes, you just need to connect with her. I go, well, how in the world do I do that? He goes, what'd you do when she was a little girl? Like, I said, how old? He goes, 2 or 3. I said, I don't know. I rocked her way too long for her to go to sleep. 4 or 5 years old, I just go rock her every night. Yeah, which is also probably shouldn't have. But I just, I'm so close to her. She's so darn cute. And so I said, I'd rock her. I can't rock her. Like, and he goes, just get close. Don't smother her. He goes, but get close. Maybe hum a little bit. Did you sing something? And I'm listening to this, you guys, and I'm thinking, this guy's lost his mind. Like, we got to fix this. She needs to be running. I thought you were going to say running. Tell her to run in the middle of a panic attack, which feels like a panic attack. So I just kind of, she was on the bed, like, losing her mind. And I just kind of backed into her and started, like, humming, don't worry about a thing. Every little thing's going to be okay. And it wasn't instant, but it pretty soon, like, I just had my arm against her arm. I started feeling her body just stop, just started to calm down and go, just breathe with me. And she started breathing with the rhythm of my arm. And it was, I could not believe the difference. And just saying, oh, babe, I know that was so difficult. I am so sorry you're going through this. And it is absolutely the opposite reaction of what my natural reaction is. It still, as much as I know that this is the way to go, and I've been amazed by it, the empathy is the way. My knee-jerk reaction is I still want to fix this. But it's so powerful.
And it's almost getting into her world, like your friend suggests you do. It's really, I think of how God gives us 5 senses, right? There's a reason for that, I think. So he gave us these eyes to see, these ears to hear, these hands to hold, to touch. Mm. And so that's really kind of what he said for you to do. He said,
right.
Which, put your arm maybe on her shoulder, give her a hug, and also eyeball to eyeball. Right. And one of my daughters, even now, will say, I need to see your eyes. I need to see your eyes when I'm talking to her. So she knows that I'm really listening, that I get it. And then, of course, we need to open our ears. And so that really is almost like the gateway to this word we're calling empathy.
Oh, that's good. Mark, you were sharing with us before we started recording about one of the things a coach says, and we were all saying, that's amazing that a coach is talking about empathy. Can you talk about that?
I'll never forget it. I was interviewing Jim Caldwell, who at the time was the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. And I was talking to him about leadership as I was preparing to write this first book that I had ever done called All Pro Dad. And so I was talking about leadership, and I said, so what makes a great leader? And he mentioned one or two things, but he said, you know, one of the greatest things of a leader, whether it's at home, at work, or in life, is empathy. Mm. And I was like, no, what is it really? Yeah. And he said, empathy. And so I started thinking about that. And he said, yeah, getting into my children's world, getting into my wife's world, understanding how she's thinking, how she's feeling. Yeah. And he said, even with my players, these are young men and they don't know everything. They might think they do, but they're very highly skilled. But they struggle sometimes emotionally. A lot of these kids come from broken homes. They come from homes where their dad was never involved in their lives. And so he was kind of that father figure to them. And so showing empathy to them was really critical.
And so what does that look like with your kids on a practical level? So I started with the extreme, you know, example of panic attacks. So what does that look like for you guys at your house when it comes to empathy, or any examples on that?
I've always liked the thought of, you know, there's a reason we have two eyes, two ears, and one mouth. Of like, we should see them for who they are, see them twice as much and hear their issues twice as much before we even speak to them just once, you know? And so, cause a lot of times if we are being attentive to the issues and the problems and kind of seeing them through what they're projecting, cause a lot of times what they're projecting is not what they're actually, what the actual problem is. But like, if you can try to see through the projection of what they're doing and see and hear what they're really wanting, then that can, you know, oftentimes allow me to be able to say hopefully the right thing at the right time.
So given space before you respond, like to get all the information.
Yeah.
I don't do that.
And also that. like what you did, you know, you allowed time for empathy to do its job when you just sat with your daughter and started humming the song, because then you were more attentive to feel her physical difference calming down. And then you could instruct her like, hey, just breathe with me, you know? And so like, it's allowing empathy to do its job. And I think a lot of times we don't, because we don't think empathy works fast enough, you know? And so it's just allowing the time.
And I think now that you're saying, I've never thought, I think the empathy calmed me down.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was calming me down. When I don't have to fix it, I don't have the pressure in this moment to fix it. I just had to be here with her. BJ, what about you guys? What does empathy look like at your house?
I think I love what you said. I think we need to be very intentional about how we react. Like, you know, that what Buck said, you know, we just want it to be fixed quick. And so in my house, with me in particular, like my wife's really great with empathy. Like she's really good at it. I get very reactive and it just, again, it makes everything worse. So it's, I need to be very intentional. It's like you, Ted, it's like, this is not my natural reaction. Like going for a run, that would be, let's all go for a run, kids. but I need to just take a breath and, not react out of my own anxiety and just say, okay, tell me what's going on, you know? So one of the things that's just sort of helped me is just to list out the things that cause me the most anxiety, just make a list of it and what's going to trigger me. And then, you know, in another column, I'll write, how would I want to respond?
Ooh, that's
here?
Good. That's
and,
good.
And then when hit it and then just expect it to happen. I expect everything in the left column to happen. And then when it does happen, I respond. Now, I say that to this day, I'm still like, just everybody just be okay.
and again, we're laughing because we do it, right? Everybody just needs to calm down.
Yeah, everybody this house just needs to be peaceful and everybody needs to be happy.
What is this? I think that's the pro move. Right
well,
there.
And Ted, I'll say this too. My boys are at an age right now, they're 9 and 6, and a lot of it, there's a lot of emotions going on in the house, you know, over silly things. And so a lot of times when I'm trying to get to the root of an issue or to the bottom of an issue, and I'm trying to listen, I'm trying to hear, I'm also trying to actively listen and guide my sons of, like, if they keep telling me what this, like, what happened, and then I'm like, but that's not the issue. Mm. Where's the issue? And so I try to dig at least a layer or two below the circumstance, because if they keep telling me the circumstance, I'm like, that's what happened. But I want to know, what are you feeling? What did that do on the inside? Not, I know he hit you, but this is not a cry from someone who just might have slapped you on the wrist, because you don't cry that much because of that. What are you feeling? What's the issue? What's the deeper issue? And for the benefit of the son who did the wrong, to understand, like, yes, we, our actions have consequences. Anxieties will happen. Things will happen to us that we can't control. But what we can try to control, or at least, you know, diagnose, is what our insides are doing, you know?
And I think even given space, like in the middle of a conflict, like, and they're trying to give us all the details, it's probably not the time to dig. Like, you go out when everybody's bodies and brains are calmer.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things, Ted, that came to my mind as I heard Buck sharing is, it's really funny that a friend of mine, a guy named Danny, who I know at least a couple of us know, he used to be a coworker here at Family First and a longtime friend. And I remember sharing with him, he and his wife and Susan and I, my wife, were all together. And I was sharing how this thing to when I need to encourage my kids or show empathy or any of those kind of things, I actually have to write it down. And sometimes I'll write it down on my calendar or make a note of it. Or I've even written blogs about it to remember the things that I need to do. And he said to me something I'll never forget. He said, "You're that robotic?" and BJ gets this because he knows how I am. And I said, "Actually, yeah." So is it better to be robotic and write it down or just not do it at all? I said, so I need that. And there may not be any other guys out there. I'm suspecting there's a few that are listening right now that are a bit like me in that sense. And so I actually have to write things down. In fact, I wrote a blog about empathy to help myself. It helped a few other people, but I always have to remember things in sequences and with alliteration. And so I came up with this three A's of what it means to be empathetic to your child or somebody else. They're being aware, agenda, and action. So being aware, and that's what we've talked about, like entering their world, being aware, feel what they feel, see what they see, and really enter their world and really identify them. And then agenda, setting aside my own agenda to focus on the needs of the child. Instead of me thinking, okay, I need to fix this and I need to feel better about this and this is what needs to happen so that everything's good. I need to set my agenda aside and focus on their agenda, what they're experiencing. Then finally, action. And that's pretty obvious that what are the action steps that I need to take in order to meet the needs of my child? So that being aware, getting off of my agenda and focusing on theirs, and then taking action ultimately are kind of those three things that I have to keep in mind all the time if I'm going to truly show empathy to my kids.
I love that. Well, and I think maybe that's a great place for us to transition here. You know, I think a bottom line here is empathy is the best response to anxiety. I think the pro move maybe is, hey, list what makes you anxious or what makes them anxious, and how do you want to respond when that's over. I don't think that's robotic at all for me personally. I think that's wisdom.
Well, thank you, Ted. I appreciate that. I needed that today. I needed that empathy and encouragement, so thank you.
Mark, do you need me to sing to you right now?
I love you, man,
and I will sing to you.
I think one of the things that we can, if anybody's mistreated by Mark, you just say, hey, Mark, I think you need to write a blog post on kindness, or I think a blog post on encouragement would be really good.
It's been great being with you guys today.
When you come back, you're supposed to come back. We want you to come back.
I sure hope you'll have me back.
Oh, we would love that. We would love that. All right, you guys, thanks for teaching me like you do every time. We hope everybody listening has been encouraged to continue to be an all-pro dad. Thanks for listening to the All Pro Dad podcast. All Pro Dad is the fatherhood program of the nonprofit Family First. Along with our motherhood program, iMom, we exist to help you love your family well. Subscribe to our daily email, the All Pro Dad Play of the Day, by going to allprodad.com/subscribe and get daily powerful and practical fatherhood tips in your inbox. The All Pro Dad podcast is hosted by me, Ted Lowe, produced by Bobby Lewis.